WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Joe.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
This is Monday Night Talk, and I am the show host, Kevin Tachi. And what you will hear here on this program this evening is going to be somewhat of a best of program featuring two individuals that you, the listener, have heard on 95.9 WATD. Unfortunately, these two individuals are no longer with us. The first couple of segments that you will hear will be of Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter, who unexpectedly passed away on July 3rd. Bill was a regular guest on this program, always looking forward to discussing some of the things that he had in the works, he had in queue, that he was discussing with folks when it came to the city of Brockton. You'll hear that in our first two segments. The mayor was a guest in January, and then a few weeks later in February, he was here in studio. Bill liked coming to this radio station and having a conversation for a couple of reasons. A, he was a radio guy. B, he liked talking about some of the things that he was doing on behalf of the city of Brockton. He was also a Marshfield guy. He grew up here, went to high school, graduated from Marshfield High School in 1974. You will actually hear him reference that in one of the interviews we're about to play for you. We will start off our number two by digging into the archives and sharing with you an interview that I conducted with the mayor. This was actually Mayor-elect Carpenter, taking place in December of 2013. You'll get a chance to hear Bill talk a little bit about what he's looking forward to prior to being sworn in. Then the final segment is being aired as a bit of an anniversary of the passing of newsman Dave Skill, who I had the privilege of working with for many years, and you, the listener, have had a chance to hear for many years here prior to his retiring at the end of December 2016. And that's what this segment will feature. You'll get to hear from different folks here in the radio station. Rob Hakala joins in on the conversation. Hopefully you remember this, but I thought I would re-air this as a little bit of a tribute to Dave and the anniversary. It's a little bit more than 2-year anniversary as he passed in June of 2017. Right now we will take a look at traffic here on 95.9 WATD, being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at BrennanSmokeShopMA.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now Pope's Island, New Bedford.
Listen, we at Brennan Smoke Shop know that you're a smart consumer. We at Brennan Smoke Shop understand why you would mail order your cigars. It's a lot less expensive, even after postage and handling. Never mind the exorbitant mass excise tax of 40%, looking at 70%. But I'll have you know that I'm up on Beacon Hill lobbying for less discriminatory taxes and regulations. And I would like to thank all of our loyal customers for giving me the opportunity to stand up for your, my, everyone's rights, freedoms, and liberties. Brennan Smoke Shop.
be a part of the show, call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to another segment of Monday Night Talk, following on the heels of Representative Matt Muratore, Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter, one of our first interviews of 2019. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Well, great to be back on 95.9 on a Monday night, and Rep Muratore is a tough act to follow, but I'll do my best.
You know, see, I'm surprised you didn't say 95.9 FM, 1460 AM.
I guess I've got to get used to that.
You might have to.
I've got to get used to that. Now, of course, you and I both have roots that trace back to the old 1460 AM, so I'm very excited to hear it back on the air again.
Of course, your roots much deeper. You have a better root system than I do.
Just because I'm a lot older, I think, yeah.
And a lot of, you know, let's not forget a lot of the calls of sporting events, whether it was boxer football, basketball.
17 years of boxer football.
God bless you.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And I still am very close friends with Charlie Bergeron and Bob Buckley, who are my two broadcast partners over the years. So if you spend enough cold nights in a small booth together, you either learn to love each other or hate each other. So fortunately, I had the opportunity to work with a couple of great guys who are still my dear friends.
And I'm sure the glue is the Cape Cod Cafe pizza. Depending on if you can get to it before Buck did.
I actually had Cape Cod Cafe pizza yesterday, so that part hasn't changed.
Fantastic. Well, welcome back to the program. Thought we would give you an opportunity to join us, give us a little bit of a thought process, and seeing that last Friday you were part of a Globe special where they kind of did from the mayor's office, a full agenda of 2019. You're one of many mayors who they tap and got your thoughts on looking back and then kind of giving a little bit of a glance forward. I'll give you the same opportunity, the audio version. If you could put 2018 into perspective, a lot happening in the city of Champions, Brockton, Massachusetts.
Well, I think that, I think 2018 was a year of progress. I think that we are changing the perception of the city of Brockton. We're building a new Brockton. I like to say to folks outside the city, please pay attention because we're writing a new story in Brockton. And our economy is thriving. We're a place where a lot of developers are looking right now for projects. Our downtown is going to go through an historic transformation over the next 12 to 24 months. Right now, we've got about $150 million in new construction between public and private ready to break ground during 2019. So you ask me, what am I looking forward to in 2019? I'm looking forward to $150 million of new construction in downtown Brockton, based largely around market rate housing, really redeveloping and reshaping downtown Brockton as a clean, safe, livable, walkable downtown where people want to live. We're looking to attract millennials. We're looking to attract first-time home buyers who are already flocking to Brockton, but really capitalizing on our three commuter rail stations, the fact that downtown Brockton is exactly a 30-minute commuter train ride into South Station, and we believe and we're seeing that there's a huge housing market for folks that are being priced out of South Boston and Dorchester, and for an extra 15 minutes on the train can enjoy a great lifestyle in Brockton for about half the cost of living. And we see it happening, that the projects are already underway. Our new parking garage broke ground a couple months ago, and we hope to get that completed before the end of 2019, and that'll be a 414 space, a parking structure at the north end of the business district in the downtown. We're seeing employers coming to Brockton, Menina Tortilla Company probably being the most recent one that's going through the permitting process right now. I'm looking to move their operations to Brockton. Of course, we got a little bit of publicity recently with the cigar wrapper manufacturer coming to the city of Brockton, and I think that's great. That company is going to bring 40 to 50 jobs to the city, and they're locating in the heart of a section of the downtown that is in transformation right now, and they'll be a big part of the transformation of that part of the downtown. So I think that, we're pleased with the progress of 2018, but even more excited about the prospects of 2019.
It's very interesting you mentioned housing, and part of the conversation I was having with Rep. Muratoria a mere 10 minutes ago was as we were talking in regards to housing and some of the issues with housing, and part of it was also talking a little bit about the new bill that was signed into law regarding Airbnb, to be fair, to the hotels, the motels, and the, you know, seeing the skyrocketing rent. So hearing you kind of come in here and talk a little bit about market rate housing, knowing a lot of that housing is within walking distance of the MBTA, and there's a lot of things that are going on in the heart of downtown Brockton, is fantastic.
Well, and as you know, Kevin, we developed a downtown action strategy that was completed about 3 years ago. And that was the blueprint. That was the game plan for downtown. And now we're now beginning to see the reality of some of these goals actually being accomplished, coming into being. And, you know, the nature of a lot of these projects, they don't just happen overnight. You know, between planning, design, permitting, applying for tax credits, financing, you know, it takes 2 or 3 years to get a project to the point that they're actually breaking ground for construction. And I think that's what we're seeing happening now. And as we look at the different strategies of our downtown action strategy, and we're built around transit-oriented development. We're built around mixed-use buildings, which the majority of this new construction will be. 121 Main Street is a $24 million project that will have a crane on it by May. The ground level is three retail spaces with 46 or 48 units of housing above it and parking below it. And we believe one of those retail spaces will be occupied by a restaurant right in the crossroads of the heart of the downtown. And it's projects like that that have got me believing that we really are building a new Brockton.
And we're talking, that's the old Kresge's department store, correct?
Before we tore it down.
before you tore it down.
It was long vacant before I became the mayor. You're right. For people that know Brockton going back a little bit, yeah, it was Kresge's department store that, you know, 50 years ago was thriving in the heart of the downtown, but had been vacant for over a decade by the time that we took it down a couple years ago. We're really excited about a market rate housing development that also break ground in the spring on West 47 West Elm Street. That was the site out behind the Brockton Courthouse. If anyone had visited the courthouse in the last 10 years, they would not have been able to miss the site of about a six-story high burnt-out brick building.
Yeah, it was a professional building, right?
Yeah, burnt out and vacant for about 9 years. We took that down a year or two ago, scraped the site, and have now sold it to a developer who's building a market rate housing project that you would think would be being built on the waterfront in South Boston, really targeting millennials with all the latest technology. And we're excited about projects like that. And you know, the core issues remain for mayors. As you look around and talk to different mayors, I mean, we're about creating jobs. We're about keeping our residents safe. We're about making sure that our kids are getting a high-quality education. I mean, some of those themes are pretty universal with mayors, but then we all have our own parochial issues that tie in with that. And I think that 2019 is going to be the year that people really see and notice that the new downtown Brockton.
Thing I should probably interject here, and that is in regards to legislation that you introduced early spring of 2018 that is actually on the cusp of a vote, and that is adult recreational marijuana, an industry that seems to be, it's doing okay. I know that there were higher numbers that were projected here in the Commonwealth. So what's your thoughts as to it being on the cusp of being yet another way to stimulate economic growth?
Well, you know, it's no secret that I was one of the first mayors to file legislation with my city council looking to establish rules and regulations and zoning for adult use recreational marijuana. We already have a medical dispensary in Brockton that's been in business for about 3 years now. And I'm excited about the prospects of the future. And I really believe the discussion on marijuana in 2018 and 2019 isn't really about marijuana anymore. That question's been settled. Mm-hmm. The discussion now is about economic development and revenue for cities like Brockton. And I really believe, Kevin, there are going to be two types of cities. here in Massachusetts. There are going to be cities that reap millions of dollars of revenue from the sale of retail adult use recreational marijuana. And there are going to be cities who watch other cities reap millions of dollars. And I think for a city like Brockton, this can be a catalyst for further economic development. It will bring in millions of dollars of additional revenue into the city coffers that we desperately need for schools and roads and public safety. And I believe that both my office and the city council have really worked with great care and diligence to establish rules and zoning that allow us to maximize the revenue from marijuana sales while minimizing any potential impacts. My only frustration is it's taken longer than I had hoped it would. I had hoped we'd already have some retailers licensed and getting started up now. I mean, as I sit back and see Salem and Wareham and Fall River and places like this already opening stores, and here we are and we're still waiting to finalize the zoning, I think it's unfortunate that it's taken us longer than I would have hoped. But at this point, I am feeling very good about the fact that the council is close to finally adopting zoning. They did adopt the rules and regulations recently. The zoning, it will be coming in a couple more meetings. And then we can really get going on what I believe will be the fastest growing industry in Massachusetts for the next 10 years. And there are going to be millions of dollars of investment. Millions of dollars are already being invested. And I want to see Brockton capture some of that investment money.
Again, we're speaking with Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter, who is our guest here on Monday Night Talk. I think I want to take a moment to ask you a quick question in regards to the governor, of course, sworn in second term. One of the things that he brought up and that he mentioned during his speech is in regards to education. And I know that you have long been a proponent talking about that the system is broken. I know that your school superintendent, amongst others, are working on an equity in education lawsuit. What's going to come to a head here first? Are we going to see a lawsuit, or do you feel, and this is something I actually asked Matt Muratore, it's kind of funny, I'm kind of having the same conversation, but I'm asking somebody who, every year when you're putting forth your budget, you're talking about a deficit that has slowly been growing over the past couple of years. What's your thoughts in regards to the governor talking about fixing this problem with funding education, and your thought as to is this something that the lawsuit is going to have to be the thing that stimulates that, or that the state is going to finally be proactive if that's possible?
Well, there are a number of different scenarios, and I think the most likely scenario is both, and that is that the legislature will seriously undertake real Chapter 70 education funding reform in the upcoming budget, the FY20 budget. And I wouldn't be surprised if simultaneously there's litigation going forward representing cities like Brockton who are suffering a great disparity in terms of resources between more affluent suburban communities and the amount of dollars per student that are spent on students in school systems in the suburbs. And what is able to be spent on students in a city like Brockton. And now, you know, this gets complicated. Most of the communities in your listening area here on ATD are kind of on the other side of this one. But I've got to tell you that from my standpoint, I grew up in Marshfield.
Go Rams.
Yes. I had the Marshfield High class of 74. And I had the benefit of a great public school education here in the town of Marshfield that really prepared me well for college. I think kids growing up in cities like Brockton deserve that same opportunity. And I think that this has been decided by the Massachusetts State Supreme Judicial Court back in 93 that clearly stated that the quality of a child's public school education in Brockton, the quality of a child's public school education in Massachusetts should not be dependent upon the local community's ability to raise property taxes. And that has been established. And what's happened with the Chapter 70 formula since the 90s is it worked for a while, but with changes, the disparity, the gap has grown again. There is a huge gap now. And so as the mayor of a city, of a gateway city like Brockton, I'm fighting for the kids in my city. And we need to have the same resources for our children that children, you know, down here in Duxbury and Cohasset and Marshfield have. And I think that's only fair. I know that others may see it differently. I believe we have right on our side. And if this does end up going to the courts, that we would ultimately prevail. But that's the last resort. I've been lobbying hard for 3 years now through our legislative delegation up on the Hill. I think that the House and Senate came very close to getting something done at the end of the last legislative session and didn't get it done. Mm-hmm. But I'm encouraged by Governor Baker's comments in his inauguration speech last week, Kevin, because it's the first time I heard the governor publicly acknowledge the fact that there is a disparity between urban and suburban education in the state right now. And he acknowledged the fact that the Chapter 70 formula needed change. Now, I'm not sure that his idea of change and my idea of change will be exactly the same thing, but we're going to go through a process. And that process begins with the governor's budget that we'll probably see in about a month or so. Yep. Yeah, within a month. But it will continue in the spring with the House and the Senate working on their versions before we get to the version that goes back to the governor. And I believe that probably the version that goes back to the governor in June or July will be different than the budget that the governor submits coming up in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So I think we'll go through a process. I'm going to advocate as hard as I can for gateway cities like Brockton. We are looking at all options. And I think that at this point, we would not be doing our job representing the folks in the city of Brockton if we weren't looking at other options like litigation in case we're not able to get the necessary reforms on Beacon Hill this year.
We've got about 2 minutes left. Really good conversation here. Anything we haven't touched upon, but you want to take a moment to at least speak to it while we have you here in front of the microphone?
Well, I think that one of the biggest challenges, I talked a little bit about maybe perspectives of some of your listening area in Brockton being different on education. Where I think we've done a great job working together is us all working together to face this ongoing opioid crisis. And when I think about the issues that faced us in 18 and the issues that continue to face us in 2019, there is no doubt in my mind that the opioid crisis is still at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. We know that opioid addiction does not discriminate. It's tearing all communities apart, whether you're a city like Brockton or you're a smaller town like Marshfield or Cohasset. And I think that we are making progress, but there is still so much more to be done. We need more resources. People are still dying. Families are still being torn apart. Individuals' lives are still being destroyed. And while I do believe that we've made some progress over the past year, that this is a fight that has a lot remaining in front of us and that we all need to work together on. And I do believe that Governor Baker has been a leader in the fight in the opioid crisis, because this is a nonpartisan issue. This is not a Republican or Democratic issue. This is not a big city or small town issue. We are all being impacted, and the quality of life in all of our communities is being impacted by the effects of this crisis. So, we continue to focus and be committed to reducing the amount of opioid addiction, reducing the availability in Brockton. We're coming at it from both a supply and demand approach, and we are continuing to look forward to work closely with our suburban neighbors in a regional strategy to reduce opioid addiction.
Again, that's Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter. But Mayor, I must say, as many elected officials say that they are. They are invested and passionate about what's going on with the opioid epidemic, but you're probably one of the few that has been proven over time who's been on this since the beginning. So again, thank you always for your words on that particular item and issue.
When I first ran for the school committee 10 years ago, it was a completely different environment. It's what got me into politics, the experience in my own family, and it's one of the things that really motivates me to want to serve as mayor today.
There he is, Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter. Thank you again for joining us.
Great to be here on a Monday night.
All right, looking forward to the next segment. Up next, hour number two of Monday Night Talk. After the 7 o'clock hour, we will speak with John J. Dunn, as we'll talk with him about overzealous parents hurting their children's education. We'll also talk about his novel, Who Shot the School Board? That's coming up in just a few moments. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Hey, welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And joining us for this segment is Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter. Mayor Carpenter is one of many of the South Shore mayors who's kind enough to do a regular segment on here just to kind of keep folks in the region up to date as to what is going on in their area, and knowing that we also are broadcasting on 1460 AM, formerly WBET, formerly WXBR. I think it was even formerly where it was just 1460 AM. You and I were on the air that day.
Yeah.
When there was a 10-hour cease and desist because we were... I think we were WBZB or something like that.
For one day, or a portion of a day.
But Mayor Bill Carpenter is here. Mayor, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Great to be here on Monday Night Talk, and thanks for the invitation, Kevin.
I thought it was probably pertinent to have you on because I usually follow what you're doing, and as I do a lot of our elected officials. You recently took a nice trip down to D.C. I believe it was a mayor's conference.
Right. U.S. Conference of Mayors winter meeting. The U.S. Conference of Mayors is probably the most prominent of the national associations of mayors. This was my sixth consecutive year attending as mayor. My first trip, I'd been mayor, I think, for about 2 weeks when I attended. But it's just a great opportunity to have access to officials and experts that normally on your own as an individual you would not. It's a great opportunity to also network with other mayors from around the country, because what's really interesting, what I've learned over the years, is that it really doesn't matter what part of the country you're from or whether you're a large city or a small city or we're considered a mid-sized city. The primary issues that mayors are worried about and are priorities to mayors are pretty universal. All mayors want to create jobs. All mayors want good public schools. All mayors want safe neighborhoods. All mayors want to get guns and drugs off the streets of their cities. So I mean, the big stuff is pretty universal. And whether you're from California, Texas, or Brockton, Massachusetts, we're all facing a lot of the same challenges. And then we all have our own parochial interests, too. But the big stuff is pretty universal. And, you know, immigration right now is an issue in most American cities. So, you know, we have all these topics. So I think it's just a great opportunity to the U.S. Conference of Mayors. It's a three-day conference every January in D.C. Again, this year I came back with some new ideas and some great networking with other mayors, and particularly you develop relationships with mayors once you're in for a while over the years. So it was a very positive experience.
Talk to me about some of the methods and trends that were being shared this year. What was some of the main topics and conversations that were had?
Sure. I think probably two of the most meaningful workshops, the smaller sessions that I went to, one would be on gun violence. Certainly, like any city, we are devoting all the resources we can to getting illegal guns off the streets of our city and to reducing violent crime in general, and particularly gun violence. So there was a great session there with perspectives of a number of cities from around the country. There was some part of it was devoted to these high-profile mass shootings that have occurred. Not during that session, but I think because of that session, I actually had an opportunity in D.C. to get to know the Parkland, Florida mayor, who has roots from West Roxbury many years ago. And actually, I sat with her for dinner one night and really got a little different perspective on Parkland than just what you read in the national news, and particularly from a mayor's standpoint. And, you know, those are the types of conversations you would normally never get to have. So I think the gun violence and strategies to reduce gun violence and listening to some of the experts from around the country was very valuable to me. And, of course, something, Kevin, you and I talk about all the time is the opioid crisis, the opioid addiction crisis that, you know, frankly, impacts every community in Massachusetts. And whether you're Duxbury or Brockton, we've all been devastated by the opioid addiction crisis. And I don't know if it's good or bad, but, you know, Brockton has been recognized nationally as a leader with some of the strategies that we've employed as some of our response to the crisis. So we had a great session, and we're going to be working more with this. This year, the U.S. Conference of Mayors Substance Abuse and Recovery Task Force, which I am very privileged to sit on, it's co-chaired by Marty Walsh and the mayor of Dayton, Ohio, Nan Whaley, but I sit on that task force with them. Well, we merged our meeting this year with the Workforce Development Committee, because we really wanted to put together the strategies that we've got to put more emphasis on longer-term recovery and continuum of care. And, you know, this fight against the opioid crisis is not just about getting people into detox. I think that's a big misconception of the public. Someone comes out of a four-day detox, what I always say to people is, now we have the opportunity to have a conversation with someone who is not under the influence of drugs at that moment. But we know that real long-term recovery takes a long-term commitment. But a key part of long-term recovery, as we continue to work with people, is being able to get a decent job. And so we've got to make part of this journey through recovery that we're providing job skills training, workforce development, job placement, so that we can help position someone for long-term recovery, where they can get a livable wage job. Because, man, if you can't make a living, what are your odds of staying clean? And what are your odds of relapse? And so I thought that was a great working session. I brought back a lot. I actually met with my director of social services right after getting back. And this is going to be the focus of our next mayor's task force meeting in Brockton, is to, you know, we've got to incorporate jobs, we've got to incorporate safe and sober housing into a plan for recovery.
It's interesting you say that, and you humbly saying that you're part of this task force, but let's not forget when Governor Baker came into office that you were part of a traveling working group, yeah, that went around the state along with Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald and many, yeah, others who sat on that board, yeah, to try to gather information. And let's also not forget that the city of Brockton, taking parts of the design of what the Gloucester police chief did, and was able to create the Champion Plan. Can we get a small update on the Champion Plan?
Sure.
How's that doing,
yeah,
these days?
The Champion Plan is incredible. And, you know, we talk about this workforce development job skills. I, we're at the point now with the champion plan, we think we're doing really well at what we do, but we need to keep pushing the envelope. We need to continue to be a leader, because there are probably a couple hundred police departments around the country now doing some form of police-assisted recovery. But in terms of the champion plan, in our first 2.5 years, we helped over 1,000 people get into overnight drug treatment programs. About half of those folks were not Brockton residents. We are helping everybody that we can for as long as we have the capacity. We have places where there are very successful programs like East Bridgewater with EB Hope, Plymouth. I just recently met with the police chiefs of East Bridgewater and Plymouth because they're sending people to the champion plan. They don't quite have the capacity to do it all by themselves, so they're referring people in need of services to the champion plan, and to the best of our capacity, we're going to continue to help people, because, as we say, this is a regional crisis. It's a statewide crisis. I was very fortunate to be selected by Governor Baker to be on his opioid working group, and Sheriff McDonald and I were the only two elected officials that served on that group, that experience way back now, that was about 3.5 years ago, but that experience reminded me that I didn't know as much as I thought I knew, and that we've got to keep learning, we've got to keep sharing best practices, we've got to keep breaking new frontiers. And I think that I think we can get this turned around, but, you know, fentanyl has been devastating in Brockton and throughout the whole region.
Again, we're speaking with Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter. He is our guest for this particular segment of Monday Night Talk. And again, just a reminder, if you have missed any portion of this segment, this show, or past shows, it's as easy as visiting our WATD homepage, 959WATD.com, and look for the Monday Night Talk banner. Click on it, and you will find a cornucopia of Monday Night Talk podcast. Digressing back to the mayor's conference, I'm usually, again, always kind of peeking at a lot of the elected officials and folks in our areas, what they're doing. And I know that you had a chance to meet with members of the congressional delegation.
Yep.
What is on your list of things when you were able to get with a Congressman Lynch or a Senator Markey? What is the first things out of your mouth?
Well, generally, on this trip, Senator Warren was actually back here in Massachusetts while I was down there, but I did meet with Senator Markey and Congressman Steve Lynch, and those are meetings we hold down in D.C. 3 to 4 times a year, and they can be wide-ranging. You know, we're always looking for, as a city like Brockton, we're looking for opportunities where there may be some federal funding available, where we may be able to get support from our congressional delegation. I think this year a big topic with both of them was infrastructure. It looks like despite the stalemate going on down in D.C., that once they get back in business, this infrastructure may be one thing that the Republicans and Democrats might actually be able to work together on in D.C. I think they're all in favor of infrastructure investment. They don't agree on how to pay for it. But in this new Democratic Congress, this has been good for Brockton, and I think for Massachusetts, where our federal delegation is almost entirely Democrats. So Congressman Lynch is getting some new committee assignments that are very influential, and one of them is on the infrastructure subcommittee. So I came back home, and we're already working on potential infrastructure projects in terms of design and proposal. In the event that federal money should become available at some point in the future, we're going to be ready to present some projects for funding.
And is this strictly just straight-out funding, or is this for grant opportunities?
Well, this would be... Well, we don't know what the final version will look like.
Okay.
But I think we do believe that the federal government is going to put billions of dollars into the infrastructure of this country. Okay. We're lobbying hard for that money to come down to the local level, because I think the people that know what's best for Marshfield are the Marshfield town officials. I think the Brockton city officials know what our critical needs are. And so we really need to convince at the federal level not to just send the money out to states, but to actually allow individual cities and towns to file projects for consideration. And that's part of what we lobby about. And so we talk about everything. And, you know, Senator Markey and Congressman Lynch have been both great on the opioid crisis. They've both worked on this for years with us. And so, you know, we look for federal issues that might impact the city of Brockton, and at the same time get updated as to what might be going on down there. Particularly this year, you know, a lot of the conversation I was interested in the latest in their perspective on the shutdown. At the time I was there, Washington was shut down, and that if that were to happen again, it is going to affect local governments.
What do you have in downtown Brockton that would have been affected by the shutdown? Anything?
Not immediately, but then if things start happening, like people's benefits start getting impacted. We don't have a lot of federal offices in Brockton. We do have a regional Social Security office in the city, but it's also services. In a place like Brockton, we've worked very hard to build working relationships with federal law enforcement agencies who, you know, we bring together federal, state, and local, all working together on various joint investigations in Brockton. And we rely upon those federal agencies with the resources that they can bring to a particular investigation. And I would love, I'll tell you one thing that I probably shouldn't share publicly, but, you know, I lobbied both Senator Markey and Congressman Lynch that if there were an opportunity in the future for one of our regional New England, Boston-based federal law enforcement agencies to locate an office in downtown Brockton, I think that would make a lot of sense. We do have a presence of those agencies here. A number of years ago, the FBI opened an office in downtown Chelsea. It was critical to the revitalization of their downtown. And right now, the FBI has an office in Lakeville. And Lakeville is a very lovely town, but I don't
know.
Not
a lot of need.
Yeah, but I don't know that the FBI office being there has any impact. However, if you took that same FBI office and put it next to the DA in downtown Brockton, yeah, it would have a heck of an impact, as the DA's new building has had there. So I try to get down to see our delegation 3 to 4 times a year. I think it's critical. And, you know, folks will say, well, you know, the congressman and the senator come back to Massachusetts all the time. You can see them here. But what it allows us to do is build relationships with their Washington staffs, and particularly their chiefs of staffs. When I visited with Senator Markey, he had probably 4 of his staff members in the room, and he also had the Massachusetts office on the speakerphone. Mm-hmm. So it's not just access to the official himself, but it's the staff, because when we have a problem, when we're calling down for help, you know, Steve Lynch is not answering his own phone down there. We're dealing with the staff, and particularly, say, an example with Congressman Lynch. Kevin Ryan has been his chief of staff since day one, and Kevin Ryan knows how to negotiate his way through the federal bureaucracy. And you know, if we pick up the phone and we call Kevin looking for some help, it's not a voice on a phone from someone he's never met. It's the voice on the phone is someone that's a friend that has been down to visit regularly, and we believe that helps our chances of getting assistance from D.C.
Help me kind of just spawn an analogy to our listeners. It's like having a plant. You can water the top of the plant, but where the water really is needed is the roots.
That's right.
And if you're able, and if there is a relationship with the staff and they know who you are, you are going to get more, you're going to have a higher rate of success in getting past the gatekeepers and being able to have that FaceTime or conversation with the elected official.
And clearly, you know, Senator Markey and Congressman Lynch have great Massachusetts offices that we also work with. Of course, our old friend from here, Jim Cantwell, now heads up Senator Markey's Massachusetts operation, and we stay in touch with Jim regularly also. But I don't think you can replace the occasional visit with the legislator and their staff down in D.C.
Anything you want to say? And just to kind of wrap up our segment here on Monday Night Talking, again, we thank you for coming in and joining us Anything you want to say?
Well, I think folks here in your ATD listening area, I hope that they will really pay attention to what happens in Brockton in 2019 because, you know, myself being a native of Marshfield, I know that folks out in the suburbs tend to have a certain perception of the city of Brockton, but the reality is changing a lot, and the reality is changing quickly. And we have $150 million of new development that's going to break ground in Brockton during 2019, both public and private. And so please, just as we're transforming Brockton over the next 12 to 24 months, perhaps watch what we're doing, and perhaps we might change your ideas in terms of the type of 21st century city that Brockton will become.
Thank you for being our guest.
Great. Great to be here on Monday Night Talk, Kevin. Thank you.
Right, there he is, Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter, our guest. We're going to step aside, and more Monday Night Talk coming up in just a few moments here on 95.9 and 1460 AM WATD.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Remember, if you do not have a chance to hear all of any of these segments, very easy. Just go on to the podcast site, MondayNightTalk.podbean.com, or just go to the WATD website, 95.9WATD.com. Scroll down, and on the left-hand side, you'll see a picture of Monday Night Talk. Click on that. It'll take you right to the website. Joining us right now, a gentleman who we have not had a chance to speak with since the November elections in the city of Brockton. We have joining us right now on the phone line, Mayor-elect Mr. Bill Carpenter. Mr. Carpenter, how are you, sir?
Hey, good evening, Kevin. Good evening, Bob. Great to be back on Monday Night Talk.
I have to ask you, first and foremost, you know, you're a guy who ran two times successfully as a school committee member in one ward of the city. What was it like to be able to run citywide for your very first time and be successful?
Well, a completely different experience, Kevin, let me tell you that for sure. And folks have explained that to me, but I guess until you actually live it, dramatic difference campaigning across an entire city and in terms of the, you know, the type of money that you have to raise and the scope of, you know, trying to cover a city of 100,000 people certainly was a huge endeavor. And I guess the lesson you come out of it with, Kevin, is that it's something you can't do by yourself. And, you know, I didn't win a campaign. I was surrounded by a group of tremendously talented and dedicated people who, you know, gave up 7 or 8 months of their lives to be part of a winning campaign. So I'm, you know, it's one of the biggest things I come away with looking back on the campaign is just how humbled I am and how appreciative I am of all the people who worked, you know, so hard because they believed in the issues that we were talking about and the difference that we could make.
Bill, as the incoming mayor and being a school committee member in another district, I had the opportunity to come to a Brockton school committee, and I didn't realize that the mayor is the chair of the school committee. How does that work out? And I know you've been a school committee member.
It's an interesting dynamic, Bob, and I'll actually be the second mayor elected directly from a seat on the school committee. I mean, it is unusual that, you know, the traditional path is usually through a city council seat and typically an at-large city council seat in most cities, but it's one of the aspects of coming in as mayor that I'm really excited about because, you know, I've devoted a lot of time and interest and effort over the last 4 years being a very active member of the school committee.
I, you know, really believe in a lot of the things that, that we're working on, and I, you know, I really have a tremendous commitment to the Brockton Public Schools, the people who work for us, and, you know, most importantly, over 17,000 students in our school system. And so I'm excited about the opportunity to now chair the school committee. And, Bob, many people don't realize the mayor is actually a voting member of the school committee. The mayor has a ballot. Now, you know, the last couple of mayors have not really exercised it, but there are some mayors in the past, and we go back to Wynn Farwell, when he was the mayor of the city of Brockton. He was the mayor before Jack Units. He came directly from the school committee. He voted regularly. Jack Units voted sometimes. The past couple mayors really didn't vote, but the mayor does have a ballot, and I'm meeting with the school committee members starting at the end of next week individually, and, you know, one of the things I'm going to be telling them is to be expecting me to cast the ballot. I don't feel obligated to vote on, you know, routine, mundane matters that are 7-0 votes. But when there's a, you know, when there's a significant issue in front of the school committee and there's some discourse, I will not hesitate to give an opinion. I won't hesitate to cast a vote.
I have to ask you, what you look at this year's city races, and there were, besides your race, which you had won by 55 votes, there were a number, I want to say, with 3 or 4 other races that were within 55 votes or less. I believe Ward 5, that was another close race, which was
Ward 5 was 16 votes.
Yeah, eventually it was decided, I guess it was 20 votes at the end when they did the recount. What do you think, what led to such close city races? Do you feel that people are just tired of what's been going on?
I think for the first time in a while, Kevin, we had challenges run strong. I mean, you mentioned it in the opening. I knocked off a 2-term incumbent. My name had never been on a citywide ballot. So, I mean, I think that there's certainly, you know, I think we had a good message. I like to think we had a pretty good candidate. But, you know, clearly the, you know, the temperament of the voters, I think, was for some change. And, you know, we saw it with, you know, 3 open seats on the city council. So, I mean, 3 new members out of an 11-member board. We'll see some significant change there. And I think for the first time, really, in our city, we're seeing the cultural diversity show itself at the ballot box. I received tremendous support in both the Cape Verdean and Haitian communities. And you look at the council, and, you know, we have Shayna Barnes, an African-American woman, elected as a counselor, and Moses Rodriguez, a Cape Verdean man, elected as a city councilor. So in that Ward 5 race with Dennis DiNapoli, Ollie Spears, an African-American guy who was very well known in the city but had never run for public office, came within a handful of votes of you know, taking out Councilor DiNapoli, who's been there for 14 years. Right. So I think times are a changing in the city of Brockton, and I believe it'll be for the better. And I think one of the things I'm proudest of from our campaign, Kevin, is the fact that, you know, you came to a couple of my events. I didn't have the usual political crowd. I mean, there wasn't one single elected official in the city who supported me publicly. Most of the people who worked in my campaign had never worked in a campaign, and I'm proud of that. I'm excited about that we got folks energized and involved in the process who had never participated before.
Again, we are speaking with Brockton Mayor-elect Bill Carpenter about not only his victory in November, but also moving forward. And speaking of moving forward, I guess you didn't take you long to hit the ground running. I believe you've already been to Harvard for a little bit of I guess you had like a seminar in order to get on the same page as far as being a newly elected mayor.
And I've actually attended 3 of those. Mass Municipal Association hosted one. Yep. UMass Boston had a great forum on a Saturday, and the one that was really exciting was the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard hosted a national one. They actually brought in 32 newly elected mayors from all over the country, and I was very excited and privileged to receive one of those invitations. And I mean, mayors of, you know, Seattle, Washington, Alaska, Texas, California, I mean, mostly big city mayors from all over the country, and that was 3.5 days, and it was a tremendous experience. They also brought in a number of veteran mayors from around the country who came in and made presentations and held workshops for the newly elected mayors, and I gained a ton of, knowledge in terms of a better understanding of the job and how to do it. I think it really clarified my thinking in a lot of areas in terms of not so much with policy, in terms of the operation of city government. People have to realize the mayor is the CEO. I mean, the biggest part of your job is, you know, making sure the trains run on time every day. So, you know, we're operating a nearly $400 million operating budget and thousands of employees, and we need to deliver city services to 100,000 people every day. So I think in terms of the operation of city government, I came back with a wealth of knowledge and a feeling that, you know, quite honestly, looking at Brockton, that we can do much better. I'm already working with the information technology folks in our city, Kevin, because I think we're 15, 20 years behind a lot of other communities in our use of information technology, and I'm going to close that gap as quickly as I can.
Bill, it's amazing getting back to your campaign, because I own a business in Abington, and I drive through the city of Brockton 5, 6, 8 times a day, and your signs were everywhere. The energy, it's like, I think you got elected on a lot of things, but I think you got elected because you wanted it more. You showed to the people that you wanted it. Your signs were everywhere. You were out campaigning. As you said, you had a young staff that weren't politically connected, but they did an unbelievable job. Do you really attribute part of it to, as you worked so hard? Because I couldn't believe it. I'm not a Brockton guy, but I was so proud when I drove through the city to see a guy that wanted to be the mayor.
Yeah, it's funny, Bob. I certainly wasn't thinking about that during the campaign, but I think it's an observation that a lot of folks have shared with me since the election, and I guess there's something to it. I mean, I like to think I'm a guy with a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm, and I think I do have a vision for the future of the city, and really our campaign was about me getting the opportunity to share that vision with the residents of the city, and we got enough support to win, and I'm just really excited about the prospects going forward. But, you know, Bob, I think there is something to that. I mean, I think that a lot of people did sense that I have a passion for this. I mean, I went to work. We took one day off after the election. Since 2 days after the election, I've been working a minimum of 14 hours a day on the transition, preparing to govern. I'm already meeting with other, city leaders, department heads, special interest groups, community groups, I mean, you name it, and I'm already working on a number of major projects, the things that I want to get going on, and I decided that the key to us having a successful first year of my administration would be the work I did in November, December, getting ready, and I feel pretty good about where we're at right now.
I have to ask, you talked about, you've already got the transition in full motion. Talk to me about putting together the transition team, and what are some of the things that have come out of those meetings?
Yeah, well, I think I did the transition team a little differently than it's been done in the past too. We had a total of 11 members on the transition team, and a few were from the campaign. Maybe 4, 5, but the majority of the people on the transition team were not from the campaign. I tried to do two things, Kevin. I tried to reach out to people who I felt had some really valuable experience that they could share with us. And I also made a conscious effort to make sure that the various community groups within the city had a seat at the table. I had a really great cross-section of folks that all brought different expertise. A guy like Attorney Larry Siskin, who's a nationally recognized labor attorney and has great perspective on personnel matters, and he did a lot of work for the city back during the UNIS administration. Two former chiefs of staff, Jack UNIS chief of staff, Mary Waldron, and Linda Belzotti's chief of staff, Ken Thompson, who served for the first three of Mayor Belzotti's 4 years. And I think a lot of people were shocked to see a couple of prominent former chiefs of staff agree to join my transition team. But not only did they join, but they've just been tremendous assets to me and to my new chief of staff, Bob Buckley. A lot of different folks. And then, we've got representatives of the various communities and a few people from the campaign. A guy like Gary Leonard, who's been a business leader in the city for decades, bringing a business perspective. So I didn't look for just a campaign team or folks that would tell me everything I wanted to do was a great idea. I really tried to put together a group that would challenge and would debate and have discourse. And let me tell you, we got plenty of that. Some of our transition team meetings were pretty lively, but lively in a positive manner. Just a lot of folks with a lot of different viewpoints and backgrounds bringing their experience to the table. And honestly, guys, I'm hoping and planning to govern that way, to surround myself with the most highly qualified people that I can find, and I will challenge them to challenge me on a daily basis. And I think that's how you really make good decisions, by having people challenge your thoughts and your plans. And we've certainly had a lot of that during the transition process, but the transition team formally met for the final time on Thursday night, and now they've handed the baton off to Bob Buckley, who and we've assembled our staff, and so now we transition to Bob. But Bob will be continuing to tap into the resources of those great people who volunteered to help me on the transition team, because just a lot of great folks who, you know, it's a volunteer position, but they care about the future of the city. And Kevin, I'll tell you, I've reached out to a lot of people already who supported Mayor Belzotti in the campaign, and I've received a great response from them. And there's many people working with me already now who did not support me during the campaign, but you know, the campaign is behind us. We've got a city full of challenges, and you know, I need everyone's help and support to lead this city forward, and I'm asking people, and they're responding.
Again, we are speaking with Brockton Mayor-elect Bill Carpenter. Bill, I got a kind of a two-pronged question. The first part of the question is, what was the decision, how hard was the decision to pick your chief of staff? And what was it about Buck? Was it his performances in the broadcast booth?
Whenever
you guys...
Definitely not that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
it is a long season in a small booth. So you do get to know your broadcast partner pretty well by the end of the year, and Buck and I spent, I don't know, 8-9 years together in the broadcast booth, broadcasting both Brock and I, football and basketball. So I suppose that's part of it. And Bob and I have been friends for well over 20 years, probably closer to 25. And I think, you know, our love and passion for sports is certainly something we have in common. But, you know, it's interesting. We talked about this early on with the transition team as to, you know, what are the qualities you look for in a chief of staff. And this is an area where I really learned from my transition team, because, you know, coming in, you think, wow, I need someone who really knows their way around City Hall. Well, you know, the former chiefs of staff told me just the opposite, that any municipal experience was, you know, way down near the bottom of the prerequisites, that they impressed upon me that, you know, chief of staff and chief of police are the two most important appointments that you make. And that, you know, the qualities they told me I needed, you know, in a chief of staff was, you know, someone that would be hardworking, strong ethics, someone, you know, committed to the city, someone that would be always supportive of me, and someone that I would, you know, trust with my life, because, you know, they're going to be tough days. And you know, the chief of staff is the one person you got to be able to count on to be at your side when the waters get a little rough. And the more they described, you know, the qualities I should look for in a chief of staff, you know, the more I really thought about Bob. But, you know, Bob is a school teacher, and I didn't think he would even have an interest. But I mentioned it to him, and he lit right up, and he said, God, I was really hoping you'd ask me. And I was kind of taken aback by that. But, you know, Buck accepted, and matter of fact, he taught his last day of school last Friday and is now on an unpaid leave of absence from the school department so that he can serve as my chief of staff. And he's already working very hard, too, and I think people will like him. It's really important, Kevin. A chief of staff is representing you as the mayor in a lot of areas and working closely with a lot of people. And, you know, Bob's a guy I'm just really comfortable with. He's an honest, decent, hardworking, good man that people like. And I think those are really important qualities, and he'll learn his way around City Hall.
Okay. And my follow-up question is that I know that you've also been meeting with several members of the city council, those who have been reelected, and I believe you've even met with some who have been newly elected.
Right.
Doc, talk to me about the process. I know that you're
going to be... Well, yeah, one of the things I did, and I think it's been well received, I mean, you know, clearly, you know, there's a lot of folks on that council who were not supporting me during the election.
Right.
But I do have, you know, at least some sort of relationship with almost everyone on the council. But, you know, I, as we... working with the transition team and looking towards what it would take for a Carpenter administration to be successful, and, you know, a strong working relationship with the city council is critical. I mean, the mayor can't do a whole lot without the council. And so along that lines, before I've even been sworn in on January 6th, we decided that I would reach out to the counselors and have individual meetings. As of yesterday, I've now met with 9 out of the 11 counselors individually for an hour or more each since last week. The final two counselors I'll be meeting with this week. So it's been very well received by the counselors. And what I've just basically done, Kevin, is gone through with them. You know, it's probably a dozen different areas that I'm already working in, and just essentially gave them an idea of the types of things I'm working on and what they can expect to be coming in front of them on the council during the first few months of the upcoming year. And I think it has really been very well received and appreciated by the counselors that, you know, that the openness and the communication and the willing to discuss issues and initiatives with them before we take action, before we bring it to the council, so that they feel as though they're partners in these things. And even when we disagree, I think there's still a courtesy and a respect to bringing the information to the counselors and keeping them well informed. I think a number of the counselors are really indicating, you know, a willingness to want to work. You know, you honestly run for these offices. I believe people run for these offices because they care about the city. As I said, the campaign is over, and you know, for the council to be successful, they need to have a good relationship with me, and for me to be successful, I certainly need to have a good relationship with them. I'm going to do the best I can to be a good partner and work as a team.
Bill, I think you could agree with me on the fact that nationally, not just with the city of Brockton, but nationally, people are tired of the old stance of the way government, the wheel turns so slow.
Right.
When you need to have change, and change is very difficult to do. What do you plan to implement in the city of Brockton to make that transition? I know you talked a lot about it during your campaign, and you have a lot of force and a lot of that energy. How do you plan on doing that with a city the size of Brockton?
The challenges are huge, no question about it, and we're not going to change the world in a day. But I think what I need to accomplish during my first year is that I think that, as you kind of alluded to, I think the residents need to see a change in direction of city government. I think they need to see a change in the way we do business. And I think they have to believe that we're making progress in the right direction. I believe that if folks can see some change happening and they can see progress being made, then they wanted to continue to keep me working at it. But I share some of those same frustrations that you just outlined. I mean, another thing that was a little unique about my campaign, although, you know, mayor is a nonpartisan office, it's, you know, still everyone knows what party folks belong to, and I'm unenrolled. I've been an independent for a long time. So, even in the primary, when there were four candidates, the other three candidates all had support and backing from their respective political parties, and that's not something I was able to benefit from. However, I think in the big picture, Bob, it helped me for the reasons that you said. I think that, you know, there are a lot of unenrolled voters nowadays because they are fed up with the way government operates. I think part of the change that I offered was the fact that I'm not a career politician. I mean, I'm 57 years old. I ran for school committee for the first time 4 years ago. I mean, not something that I really aspired to. When I ran for school committee, I never dreamed I'd run for mayor. But I'm excited about the prospects, and we do need to make changes. And I think really the two biggest issues facing Brockton are public safety and economic development. You know, we have to turn the tide on crime in our city. We have to, you know, change this perception that Brockton's not a safe place. I feel very safe here, but having said that, I don't deny the fact that, you know, we have issues with gangs and gun violence and with drugs. We have to do a better job, and we've already started doing a lot of work in that regard. I am reaching out to county, state, and federal law enforcement agencies from all branches to bring resources to the city to help us, and I'm getting great response. With economic development, economic development and crime tie together,
right?
Because until I can, you know, convince folks that Brockton is a safe, good place to live and to work, you know, how am I going to convince someone to come open a business here? How am I going to convince a young family to come buy their first home here? And those are my biggest goals. We've got a big inventory of vacant and abandoned houses that I need to get those properties sold and reoccupied with good working people who are going to fix up the properties and take care of them. And that's That's what's going to help bring back our property values.
Right.
I really do believe the first step in that is having people feel as though they're safe in the neighborhoods. And I admit that there are, a lot of folks that don't feel that way right now in the city, and we're going to change that. I guarantee you we're going to change that, and we're already working on it, and we'll continue to work on it when I get there, and people will see a difference in the first year.
Now, I have to ask, and we just got a couple of minutes left, and we are speaking with Mayor-elect of the City of Brockton, Bill Carpenter, and that is what major changes are we going to see? Is there going to be a major shakeup in the police department? Are there departments that you're looking in City Hall that you're going to be making some major changes so that there will be a difference and that there will be a fresh
path? You will see changes, and right now at this point, Kevin, I really can't specifically discuss personnel issues publicly, but there will be changes, and they will be noticeable, and you'll see them during the first year. And one of the things I've learned from some of this experience since the election is, I've got some great colleges and universities in the greater Brockton area who are willing to also bring us some resources. So my time at Harvard, their school of government, and UMass Boston, I've been in to meet with a couple times already. They have the Collins Center, which is their public administration school, Bridgewater State University. So they're willing to bring some resources to us also in terms of helping me assess how we govern, and I'm going to look at the way we do personnel. I'm going to look at our DPW and water and sewer departments. I'm going to look at our police departments. So I think we need to be more responsive. We need to be more efficient, and those reviews have already started to begin. And I think how I would sum it up for you, Kevin, the best word I can give you is accountability. I just don't really feel like right now in Brockton City government there's a lot of accountability, and I'm not only going to insist on it, I'm going to demand on it, demand accountability, and it will begin with annual reviews of department heads that don't take place right now, and in my administration, I work with department heads to set annual goals, put action plans in place to achieve those goals, and also to have all departments contributing towards common goals for the city. And I'll give you one quick example of what I mean by that. When we talk about public safety, everyone thinks, police, crime, but police and fire. But you know what? In some way, every single city department can contribute towards making Brockton a safer place to live in and improving the quality of life in our neighborhood. So whether that's the school department getting a truant officer out there to make sure teenagers are in school and not hanging on the corner, if that's the highway department changing a street light that's out, if it's the parks department keeping the playgrounds clean so that we don't have needles and condoms in playgrounds, we have playgrounds and parks that families can enjoy with their children. I mean, these are all initiatives from various departments that will contribute to improving public safety and improving the quality of life of our residents. And that's the type of approach I'm going to take, and that we will have a vision, and we will set goals, and we'll have a plan to achieve those goals. And the departments all have to work together with a common vision, with common goals.
Bill, I love your enthusiasm, and I love, like I said, what you're doing for the city and the common goals. And we're coming close to the end of our program.
We have 2 minutes left. At least with this segment, we have 2 minutes left.
What would be your first out-of-the-gate attempt to change, to make the change and initiate the change? And maybe, I know that's a difficult
one. Maybe your first 100 days. What do you got planned?
Well, first 100 days is maybe a little bit easier. I think you'll see significant changes in our approach to law enforcement. I think those will be noticeable in the first 100 days. I am going to proactively try to resolve the situation with the Aquaria desal plant, where we're spending $6 million a year for nothing. I am going to attempt to resolve this dispute with the developers of an electric plant. I'm going to attempt to settle the dispute with Stonehill College, where they're underpaying the city of Brockton about $200,000 a year for their sewer. I think you'll see me working a big difference that we really haven't had time to talk about, but my approach with the business community. I have to change this perception of the city of Brockton as not being business friendly. And being business friendly is not just shaking hands with someone. It's changing the way we operate city departments and boards so that businesses feel as though they'll be treated fairly here, right, and they'll be communicated with openly. One step you see right now, we're already working on it. We give you a quick example, and that is putting our building permit process online. So we're already working on a completely revamped website that will have online permitting and licensing, and the building permit will be the first one, and I hope to roll that out in February. And over the course of the next year, we'll be getting all of our city permits and licenses automated and available online on our website. We'll also be able to pay all of your various city bills on the website. And we'll communicate better. We'll be doing a weekly video that'll be available on the website, and I'll also be hosting a twice-a-month cable TV show. So, I've got a lot of plans. We could spend the entire show just talking about the things I'd like to do, but you absolutely will see a number of initiatives in the first 100 days.
Well, man, we will also, we'd like to add to that list of media stuff that you do and invite you to be on Monday Night Talk. You know, maybe every 5 weeks we have you on to kind of update folks as to what you're doing. And it's something, if you want to share the link onto your website, the city website, for folks to be able to hear the latest, we would be more than happy to.
Absolutely. And Bob, also great to have you on the show with me this evening, because I think a difference you'll see with me also is I favor a regional approach to a lot of the issues facing the city. I think we can be a better neighbor. And I think realistically, the surrounding towns like Whitman and Abington, you know, how Brockton goes affects the whole region. And so as we turn the corner in Brockton and Brockton begins to thrive again, that's good for the communities around Brockton also.
Excellent. Well, there he is, Mayor-elect Bill Coppinger being sworn in on January 6th. And we'll try to work to get him on probably the first week of February to kind of chat with us about some of the things that he's been working on. Thank you very much, Bill.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
gentlemen.
Bill.
Great to spend some time with you this evening, Kevin. Thank you for the invitation. I'm open and available to join you on Monday Night Talk whenever we can.
We're going to step aside when we come back. More Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See? There is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield. It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. This, of course, the second hour of the program. And we have a very special guest for this segment, this gentleman, a colleague of mine here at the radio station, who has been a very important part of WATD for some 30 years, very instrumental in a lot of the stuff that's done in the WATD newsroom, as he has done somewhere around 60,000 newscasts, some of them, of course, in the morning. But there have been times he's done afternoon shifts, he's done weekends. That all comes to an end in just a couple of days, as he'll transition out of the newsroom to more of a part-time role at WATD, whether it's fill-ins in the newsroom, maybe a couple of air shifts, whether it's during the weekday or on the weekends. Who am I talking about? None other than Dave Skill himself. He's going to be here for this segment as well. We have some sound cuts from some folks here at the station and on the microphones chiming in, kind of being my co-hosts. We have Rob Hackler of the South Shore's Morning News, who has worked extensively with Dave, as well as Ryan is here joining us, Ryan Stanton, and they will be here to chat with us about Dave and working with this fantastic guy. We'll start with you, Rob. Welcome back to the program, and thank you for joining me to share some thoughts and some memories about our good friend, our colleague here, Dave Skill.
Thank you. Great to be here. And absolutely, of course, I want to honor Dave. And it's good to be on your show, Kevin.
Well, not as good as being on your show, Rob. South Shore's Morning News with Rob and Lisa. And Ryan, of course, Ryan is another one who is leaving. But he'll also be here as well. But I thought Ryan, one of the younger folks who works here, he could be a part of the segment as well. And we'll have a little sprinkling of some of the folks that you have worked with, Dave, over the past 30 years. Welcome officially to Monday Night Talk. This is your very, hopefully it's not your last stint, but
first and last.
Yeah, your first stint. And I want to take a couple of moments just to give you time to discuss your career. I mean, here at 959 WATD.
Well, I'm not used to doing things in the evening. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it is kind of dark.
Mornings. It is.
It's the opposite dark that you're used to.
It is indeed. It's been a long 30 years and a fun 30 years. There's a great line in the movie Good Morning Vietnam. It's only radio, and it is only radio, but it's been fun for 30 years, and I want to thank specifically Ed Perry. Ed Perry was the one who got this all started. Basically, what happened was back in 1984, I started volunteering for the Talking Information Center in Marshfield, and they were based at Library Plaza in downtown Marshfield. And then Ed built the WATD building here on Enterprise Drive. And while he was getting WATD ready to go, TIC, the Talking Information Center, was up and running, and I was working there just weekends because I had a regular job during the week. And Ed walked in one day and said, "You know, you sound pretty good. Have you ever thought of being on the real radio?" And I said, "Yeah, that'd be great." And I told him I had done college radio, and I worked at a radio station in Worcester while I was in college. And he said, "What about weekends?" And I said, "That'd be great." So I ended up doing some newscasts on the weekends, some DJing on the weekends. And then my job in computers where I was working went away. I knew it was going away because I was told that they were making some changes, but my job was perfectly safe. And that's when I knew the end was near. And in fact, in the fall of 1989, I came on board with WATD as the morning news guy. And I was quite honored to do that because most of the time when you start a radio station, you start doing overnights or weekends or something like that. And I did do some weekends. But to be the morning news guy right off the bat was interesting and quite a challenge. And it's been very interesting over the years. And one of the things that Ed said to me when he hired me, he says, "Well, here's the deal." That's when you know you're in trouble. Mm. "Here's the deal. You do news for 25 hours a week and you sell advertising for the rest of the time." So what I would do is I would come in my casual clothes and I would do the morning news. And at 9:30, I'd run in the bathroom and put a suit on and go out and try to sell ads.
Wow.
Wow, so you were like the WATD Superman. You would be Clark Kent in the morning.
That's right, and then I put my Superman or my Superman suit on, and I would go
super
out and
super salesperson suit on.
Yeah, well, I wasn't a super salesperson. I did okay, but it wasn't my favorite. It's interesting. I like the part of sales where you service clients, but the going out and banging on doors saying, "Do you want to buy an ad?" I'm not very good at that. So the clients that I've had over the years, and I've had several clients, really, for more than 20 years, the South Shore Music Circus, Family Pet and Garden Center, as Rob would say,
up on the hill
on Route 53 on the Hanover-Pembroke Town Line. I mean, they've been longtime sponsors, and I love working with these folks, and it's just been fun. But the idea of selling was not to my liking necessarily, but I did it, and it worked out okay. And then over time, I kind of got out of sales, and I spent more time doing the news and also having an opportunity to do feature series. And over the years, I've done feature series on all the Boston Harbor Islands, lighthouses, Quincy Quarry,
Irish moss. Shovels.
We did the Shovel Museum at Stonehill College. We did a series with John Buckley from the Plymouth County Registry of Deeds, remarkable residents of Plymouth County's past. And
Simpson Spring.
We did Simpson Spring. In fact, I was talking to John earlier this week, or late last week, I should say, and we're going to be doing more features with John, remarkable residents of Plymouth County's past, and that kind of thing, and colonial history in preparation for 2020. But I also had a chance to do some DJ work, occasionally filling in during the midday show, and I'm a big oldies fan, and so Ed has allowed me over the years to do my favorite, doing oldies shows, whether it's the Beatles or Motown or the 60s girl groups, whatever it happens to be. So usually once a month, I kick Ron Dwyer out, and I take over his shift and do a Saturday show, or on the holidays like Memorial Day, Labor Day, Columbus Day, when the DJ wants the day off, I say, "I'm here," and so I'll do a specialty show, and that's been a lot of fun.
Talk to me about working with Christine James.
I've been working with Christine now I think since about 1990. And it's interesting, we work together, but we don't work really together. We're like two ships passing in the night, because if I do the morning, she does the afternoon. And for a while, she was doing some mornings, and I would do the afternoon. So we don't really spend a lot of time together. The time that we spend together usually is, you know, what have you got for me for the afternoon? What are we doing for tomorrow? And Christine and I have sort of set up a plan where you don't just live day to day. You plan out. Like on Monday, I'm planning for the rest of the week. And Christine and I have always worked together, and we share the responsibilities. I mean, she's the boss. She's managing editor. But titles don't really mean an awful lot around here, to be honest.
No, it's just another hat to wear.
Yeah.
Basically.
And so we've been working together. And traditionally, I do mornings, she does afternoons, and she likes that. And one of the things, we always try to help each other and be supportive. And over the years, we've had a lot of young people who have worked with us.
Thank you.
And they come and go. People like you.
Yep.
They come and go. Some stay a while. Some stay not all that long. But Christy and I have always kind of been the two anchors, if you will. Not meaning news anchors, but anchors of the news department. Right. And a lot of people, young people, what happens is they either are really good and they get a job at some big station. Like we had a young guy from Scituate, Aaron Katursky, works at ABC. Mm-hmm. We had Laurie Kirby, who was the news director for a while. She works at WBZ.
Of course.
Yes. Steve Burns. A young guy right out of Emerson, and he wasn't even with us a year, and he ended up down at WMAL in Baltimore as a news anchor and news reporter. So, but then you also have people who say, you know what, I thought this was going to be fun, but I don't think I like it, and they would get out of the business.
They
might join another company. Mm-hmm. We had a young woman who left us and became like a paralegal at a law firm. But anyway, over the years, we've had a lot of people come and go and come and go, but Christine and I have always been here to kind of hold things together.
Well, I thought I would take an opportunity to. That's why we have Rob here, because Rob's gonna have a moment to kind of talk a little bit about work with you guys, maybe share some stories. Now, it'll just be small, because I know later this week you guys are gonna do a little bit more of a conversation before Dave has his big send off to the oldies.
Yes, yeah, so it's Friday morning.
I know you're working on that right now.
Yeah, we're working on
the Dave Skill roast.
A nice month. No, roast. It's going to look back.
Dave Skill, this is your life.
Really the fun moments of 30 years, and unfortunately we don't have most of those years. Tried to acquire as much audio as we could back to kind of get a sample of Dave working with the different hosts over the years before I arrived.
No kidding. Well, what I'd like to do is we're talking about Christine. And if we could, I think what we want to do is we want to play Christine. Actually, I asked her if she would give us a little something to share about you, Dave, if you will, sir.
Well, hi there, Dave. It's Christine James. How are you? Dave and I have worked together for over 25 years. Actually, I think it's about 26 years. And Dave knows what I'm going to say, because he amazes me. A, the man never sleeps. And B, the man never naps. In all the years we've worked together, too, he's taken two sick days in all these years. One of them, I don't remember. He insists that he took it, but I think he may be making that up. Anyway, Dave is not really retiring. He's semi-retiring, which means he'll come in here and he'll be doing some fill-ins for us, which we like. He'll get to sleep in, so I know he actually does sleep, and he'll actually get to do a lot with music, because I know music is Dave's first love. And you know how I know that? Because when he doesn't think I'm watching and he's doing his oldies special shows, he's in there lip-syncing to the music. And sometimes when he really thinks I'm even out of the building, I even catch Dave dancing a little bit. So, Dave, sing, dance, lip-sync to your heart's delight, even though you're not really retiring, you're semi-retiring, and we will see you around here now and then. Enjoy late mornings and a little bit more time off. You've deserved them. Christine James, WATD News.
The managing news editor of WATD, that's Christine right. James, and that was, thank you, Christine, for giving me that little soundbite. Now, I had a chance. Now, you said you did sales, right?
I do some sales.
All right, so what was it, did you ever have to sit in on? I heard a lot about those sales meetings. Have you ever had to sit in on those?
Yes, for a while, Christine and I used to have to go to the sales meetings, because Christine does a few things. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that it was torture. It was absolute torture. I just found that not a lot got accomplished, and we had some wild fights. It was just not a pleasant experience. In fact, after a sales meeting, I was ready to say, you know what, I think I'd rather be out selling than go to the sales meeting. But I'm not a big meetings person. The place that I worked before, a computer company, we didn't have meetings. Your boss gave you something to do, and if you had a problem, you went to him. And when you were done with the project, you gave it to him. But we didn't have a lot of these meetings, which I find to be time wasters, to be honest.
Well, I thought I would take time again to go around and talk with a couple of different people who've been here for a while. And so what I thought I would do is I would tap a fellow salesperson, also a gentleman from time to time who grabs the megaphone and does the good, the bad, and the really, really stupid. Mr. Bob Parkus weighed in when I told him that we were doing a little something to chat with you.
What can I say about Dave? Well, he always showed up, I can say that. He was never late for lunch, and boy, could that guy pack it away. The newsroom was always chock full of empty Chinese takeout, crusty pizza boxes, and not a shred of incriminating evidence. I gotta say, Dave never appeared inebriated on air. I don't know how he did it, frankly, and now I'll never know. Because he's gone, and he's taking his secrets with him.
The always creative Bob Parkus.
Now, it's interesting. Now, for people who know Bob Parkus and have seen Bob Parkus, Bob kind of looks like Santa Claus. Yes. Well, Bob and I actually graduated from the same high school.
Archbishop Williams,
Bob, I think, was 3 or 4 years ahead of me. So I was at Archie's one day, because my wife was teaching there, and I got a hold of the yearbook from Bob's graduating year from high school. And he was this clean cut and short hair, no beard. Something happened over the years.
Really?
Something happened over the years. And it couldn't have been at Stonehill College where he went. It must have been after that. But, and I see Bob, and it's interesting. Bob shows up about 7 o'clock in the morning, and he's here until about 10 and then disappears.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
With his tomato juice.
And sometimes he goes on a bicycle, and sometimes he goes in his van. But he goes, which reminds me, I do want to say one thing. Bob said, you know, I was never late for lunch. I was late for work once. Back in the 1990s, I overslept.
No.
Luckily, okay. At the time, the news director was Bob Stone, a graduate of Emerson, and Bob lived at Fox Run, which is now, I think it has a different name. And I called him and I said, Bob, you got to help me. So he ran over and covered for me. But that's the only time I was ever late.
30 years.
In 30 years.
And it's true about the sick days, right? I mean, I never remember a time when you've...
I've never had a sick day since I've worked with you.
That's amazing. I think that's great. And that certainly says a lot about, you know, showing up and doing the job and dependable and being there.
And setting the alarm for 3 or 3:15. And, of course, during stormy weather, would set the alarm for maybe 2:30, 2:45, because you just never knew... how the roads were going to be. I mean, you're not worried about traffic in the middle of the night, but you're worried about the roads. And that's actually the reason that I'm stepping down. It's not that I don't love what I do. Mm-hmm. I do. And if I live 10 minutes away, I wouldn't retire. But I'm just finding as I'm getting older that it just bothers me, and I get sort of tense about...
Sure.
Hey, if I see the forecast and for 4 days out it says snow's coming, I get nervous.
Yeah. Yeah, because you've lived it. You've been out. You've seen what it's like to try to drive in here. You've seen people spinning out, and you know what it's like to try to get in through the parking lot.
Right.
To actually get in the building and how dangerous it is.
It can be, yes. In fact, I have seen spinouts. And so the answer was, well, then don't drive in it. So the answer was to sleep here.
Oh, yes. And how enjoyable was that?
Not. So anyway, when Bob Stone was news director, Bob lived at Fox Run. So if it was going to snow, I would stay at his place and just trudge through the snow down Enterprise Drive to get in the building. But then he left us, and I was out of luck. So my wife said to me, I'm going to get you a cot. And so we ordered a cot from L.L. Bean.
Wait, is that leaving with you? I was going to start using that.
Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do with that. I was the Dave Skill Memorial
cot.
Anyway, what I would do is if there was snow coming, let's say there was a snowstorm coming at 4 o'clock Monday morning or 3 o'clock. Sunday night, I would drive down here before the snow with some food, and I would sleep, you know, or attempt to sleep in my L.L. Bean cot with a blanket and sheets, but you never sleep well.
No.
And it's not so bad if you do it like once a year, but sometimes, you know, 2 years ago, the winter we had with all that snow, I was here for like 3 or 4 nights.
Yeah.
Not in a row. I think it was 2 nights in a row and a night and a night.
But in 30 years, that had been that gets old.
It gets old real quick. It gets old real quick. I figure on average, I've probably had to sleep over, on average, a couple of times a year, which is a couple of times too many.
Yeah, you've done it.
I've done it, too. I actually slipped downstairs on an air mattress. And And one night, a couple of mice ran by me. I'm like, whoa, what is this? It's interesting. Even the mice get cold.
Yeah. I've had to do it once.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
You know,
tried to sleep in your chair, didn't you?
I tried, yeah. I should have gone with a cot.
Well, use Dave's cot.
No, you know what's interesting? Over the years, whenever it snowed, it was always one of my mornings to work. I've noticed that. It always seemed to be my morning. It never snowed when Christine was doing a morning. I can't figure that out.
I know. No, you're right about that. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Dave Skill.
And just to be on the safe side, the cot is not leaving this building until December 30th. I'm not taking any chances.
No. All right, so later this week, it'll be gone. If you will, we got one more person, Jackie McGoodwin.
Oh, wow.
Somebody else who's been here for many, many moon.
A little longer than I have.
Hi, I'm Jackie McGoodwin, and I've worked with Dave Skill for over 30 years, and it has been a pleasure. Dave, you have been great. We have enjoyed many laughs together. I always enjoyed watching you leave with your mattress rolled up under your arm after two long days of giving storm coverage to everyone on the South Shore. Our kids have grown through high school, college, adulthood, and we've always had some wonderful stories to share. I will miss you, and I wish you nothing but the best of luck for you and Carol.
Oh, wow.
That again, Jackie McGoodwin with a little sign-off for you.
That's very nice. Thank you, Jackie.
I want to get to you two guys. Now, how long have you, Rob, been working with Dave Skill?
Well, I came on full-time in November of 2000 around the presidential election, and I worked at that time with Aaron Katursky in the morning briefly, and then he was kind of at the end of his career here. Now, Dave had done the mornings primarily, pretty much he'd been the major morning guy pretty much for the last 30 years, right, Dave?
Right. I was doing 5 days a week for a number of years, and then they made some changes, and they took me off mornings, and then I was doing middays and some afternoons. And then what happened was, with Aaron and you, I was basically relegated to doing middays. I was doing a lot of court coverage and reporting from on scene at fires and accidents and things. But then Aaron Katursky came up to me one day and he said, Dave, I hope you didn't throw away your alarm clock. And I said, what do you mean? He says, I'm leaving. And so I think Aaron only did this show for about 4 months.
Yeah, it was not that long. I mean, he had been here a little bit before I had gotten here. But, we changed over the show and implemented the new format at that time. And then he moved on, and Dave got a little chance to see what it was like to sleep in a little bit. But then took on the 5 days again, which was great. And you said, yeah, you'd be happy to jump in. And so you've been, even though I've worked with you, Kevin, and Aaron, and Steve, and Christine, and Dodrell, and other people that have done the morning news anch, primarily it's been Dave Skill, right, who's had the majority of those days, whether it be five and then four, and then in the last few years it's been about three.
Yes, we've kind of cut it back. Christine sometimes would do one or two, Kevin would do one or two, and I found that working three mornings was nice because it gave me a chance to be on the radio. It also gave me a chance to, spend time at home and sleep a little bit.
So, yeah, I'm about 2045. I'm hoping to cut down to 3 days a week, too.
Are you really?
Yeah. Probably won't happen. It's been great to work with Dave Skill. And, obviously going through the storms, I think about a lot of our storm coverage that we've done over the years where we've kind of just hunkered down. And Dave, we did the school cancellations when that was a lot more, when radio was the only way to get that, a lot when we started out working really before the internet took over. And we would be in there all morning long. And of course, one of the big days, although it's such as to think about, was really 9/11 was the day that, and I think that was the time when, I'm not sure if was Aaron still here, but he went away or whatever. But I think you were the only one in the newsroom.
I was,
and had to end up staying the whole day.
Yes, I had come in for the morning, and about a little before nine, we had the television on, and we saw a report of a plane going into one of the Twin Towers, and the assumption was, oh, it's a Piper Cub or something, not a big deal. Well, we discovered it was a huge deal. Mm. And it was one thing after the other with the planes, and then it was one of those days where you just didn't know when it was going to end.
Yeah.
And so basically, Rob came in and helped me, but yeah, I mean, I was on the air basically from 5 in the morning until about 7:30 that night. And Ed Perry brought in all kinds of people. He brought in an airline pilot. He brought in a psychologist. He brought in a whole bunch of people to kind of comment on this. But again, we were flying by the seat of our pants. We had no idea how this was going to end.
Yeah.
And again, we're speaking with the great Dave Skill, master of the news department and also a man who loves his music. I know when I'm on with Rob from time to time, and there's somebody from a 60s girl group or a British band.
We think of you, Dave.
We think of you, and like, what would Dave say? What would Dave say?
Right. When we do celebrity birthdays, I'm always happy when we have people from the world of music, whether it be, it might be Mick Jagger or it might be Paul McCartney, something like that.
Give us a good Dave Clark 5 story. Tell me about the drums out front.
Oh, yes. Now, Dave Clark 5. Dave Clark was the drummer, and most bands have a drum kit in back. Well, Dave Clark apparently had an ego thing, and he put his drum kit right smack in front.
Well, it's not the band and Dave Clark.
But it's very unusual. I mean, Ringo Starr had his drums in the back, and most drummers.
Yeah. But those are the kind of things that I've loved. Dave has obviously added a lot to the music conversation. He knows a lot, plus about history. And really, the features have been fun because I've gotten to kind of, assist Dave in helping to, listen to some of the audio that he puts together. And that's been a lot of fun to listen to all those features, whether it be, the Toll House, in Whitman, to, again, talking about the prominent places in history and the lighthouses and the Simpson Spring and the granite and Quincy. And, it's been great. And that's really been a nice... I think those have been really wonderful, David.
Great compliment to the Money Shop.
Yeah, in addition to, doing the newscast, it's kind of given you more of a creative outlet.
Yes.
Who am I going to go to for the box office on Monday morning? Who?
Actually, we're going to break my replacement, Dan McCready, and we're going to let Dan get settled for the first few weeks. Basically, my understanding is Dan is going to be doing afternoons just to kind of get into the groove, and then probably in January, he will be doing mornings, and I told him that, yes, part of your responsibility is to do on Monday, you have to do the box office results, count all those ticket stubs, and come
up
with
it. So it will live on?
So it will live on.
So that newsroom's going to be, because you clean right up after you count all the ticket stubs.
I do.
Is he going to be efficient enough like you?
I hope he's nice and neat.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope so as well.
That'll remain to be seen.
Now, I want to bring in, Ryan, who has been sitting here quietly being part of the show. You have transcended not only some of the folks who have been here for 30 years, but younger folks like myself and Ryan. Ryan, what's it been
Everybody's
like?
Younger than me. Are you kidding?
A little bit.
Except for Red.
Ryan, what's it been like working with Dave?
Dave and I don't really work together that much, but Dave's definitely...
Shift passing in the night?
Same thing with, when I am in the newsroom, it's the afternoon shift, and, we'll inform each other on what's going on. Dave will tell me what he left me for the afternoon, which
and
is
I always leave
nice.
Him a lot.
Yes, you do. Thank you very much for that. No, it's been great. I've just been in the newsroom for the past year part time, and working with Dave has been good. He's taught me a lot. I've listened to his newscast to see the format and working with Dave has been a pleasure the past year and even before that, just getting to know him over the 5 years that I've been here.
Well, thank you.
And same here. I've learned a lot from you. My inception into the newsroom a decade ago, being able to go from being a town hall reporter for election results to, learning how to be able to write scripts and do raps and voicers and get an idea of, the grind of the morning and being able to be a dependable part of the morning team or whatever it may be.
Well, that's true. And that's another thing. Dave has really been great at working with almost everyone that has come into the newsroom, helping. I think Dave, have worked to try to make the reporters better reporters. You've helped to make the writers better writers and the anchors. You've given them tips and you really will take the time because I'll walk by and the phone and Dave will be on there trying to help out or emailing them tips, and you'll take the time in order to help, and I think that says a lot about being a good team player.
Well, I think it's probably my teaching background. I was trained as a teacher, and I actually taught at Northeastern University evenings for a number of years, and so I do like, and I did some training when I worked in the computer industry. I trained people on computer systems, and I'm the guy that writes all the instructions on how to do stuff in the newsroom, because if it's not written down, it's kind of hard to communicate with people. And I just want to say that anybody who works at WATD in the newsroom, when they go anywhere else, it's always easier than working here because nobody does news the way WATD does. It's something that I'm very proud of. We cover all the towns in the area. Rob, we do storm coverage. Mm-hmm. People rely on us. You can't rely on a newspaper. You have to rely on us. And so when it's storm time, it's crunch time for us. We've got to get the information out, and we work with a lot of the emergency management folks in this area, and it's really worked out well. And Iowa's feel that we're part of everybody's family. We're like part of their extended family.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what's, you know, they're, you know, letting us into their homes and cars, and we really appreciate that.
Rob, I want to thank you for sitting in on the segment. We got like 2 minutes left before we wrap up. Jerry Thornton, of course, on deck. He'll be in from Barstool Sports. Talk a little sports here. But I want to, again, can wrap up our tribute to our good friend and colleague here, Dave Skill. Anything you want to say in closing? Tease folks about this coming Friday as to what you're going to do. How many bloopers do you have lined up right now?
Well, no, I mean it's not going to be all that thing, really. There are some fun bloopers that we can laugh around and maybe, you know, have some fun. And I'll maybe give Dave a copy of that when he leaves as well. He can take that home and have some fun with it. But really what we're going to do more Friday is kind of let Dave wrap up his last official newscast as far as his regular schedule. And that'll be the 9 o'clock news this Friday. Then we're going to let Dave have a chance to just kind of talk directly to the listeners who have welcomed Dave into their homes and cars for all these years. And then what we'll do is kind of take a look back. And like I said, I wish we had the archiver like we have now that I could pull up everything. But I've got some stuff with Dave and Kathy D when Kathy D did the mornings. And we're going to have some stuff when Steve Mason hosted in the mornings.
Sure.
And some stuff more from the recent years as well, because Dave doing that has actually worked with a variety of people, David, through the times in the morning.
We have. I mean, I worked years ago with a guy named Joe McMillan who does our imaging. You hear Joe in a lot of our commercials.
That's right.
And then I worked with Kathy for a number of years. And Kathy and I used to have a great time together because she would always pick on me because we would talk about my, you know, experiences with gym class and shop class in high school and how inept I was. And needless to say, she loved doing that.
Well, Dave, I've loved working with you.
Thank you.
And I thank you for all the knowledge that you have shared with me. And hopefully I can share it with the next young, bright-eyed news reporter who comes in here and be part of the newsroom, hopefully for the next 10 to 20 years, and keep up your name. And, of course, you're not going anywhere
I'm not going away.
From what I understand is this Friday really isn't really your last day. It's just your last day being, you know, a full-time news anchor here. You're going to go on to rocking and rolling.
Well, as a matter of fact, the day after the retirement party, I'll be back here doing an oldie show.
Of course, yeah. I love that.
That's a retirement. It's the shortest retirement in history.
Dave, we're going to miss you.
How can you miss me if I won't go away?
Well, we thank you for coming in and doing this segment here on Monday Night Talk.
Can I go to bed now? It's getting late.
Because you actually have to get up in the morning.
Yes.
So we thank you for coming in, and Rob also, and Ryan for being a part of it.
Thanks, Kevin.
Also the other folks who also shared, Christine, Bob, and Jackie, who shared their thoughts and sentiments. And Dave, this isn't goodbye. It's just we'll see you tomorrow.
All right.